Welcome to this episode of Not Your Father's Stocks. Today, I have Chris with me to discuss a couple positions he covers for us at Augury. So welcome back to the show, Chris. It's been a while.
Hey, glad to be back. Glad I could make it, man. A lot of work into the chat.
It is. So we're going to start talking a little bit about VIAC or Viacom CBS. A lot of you guys probably know Showtime or Pluto TV. It's a pretty massive company. They do a lot of different things, but Chris covers this super in-depth for us in the chat, so I'm going to let him start out giving us a little overview and back history of the company.
Yeah, I will start. I can just kind of do a monologue about how, what they do and like the profiling, basically. So I'm pretty sure everyone who's listening probably is going to be familiar with the company, pretty well-known company. So just a breakdown, Viacom CBS is comprised and doing business in different segments. One is TV entertainment, and they report, the way I'm going to present it to you is how they actually report their performance. One is the TV entertainment, like stuff like CBS, the television, the networks, the sports. CBS All Access is actually in there. We're talking, the second segment is cable networks like Showtime, the Pluto TV, which is actually their main game. We're going to talk about Pluto today a lot. Next, we have film entertainment, which is like Paramount, of course. And then a smaller, substantially smaller segment, which is publishing, Simon & Schuster, which they've been trying to sell for a while now. But they kind of have trouble doing it due to COVID. But I think they will be able to pull it off. And this will free up more cash for us. That's good. Now, I don't think the business segments that they report in accurately reflect the inflection point they were in. So starting off with the TV entertainment and the cable networks, we initially see, so I'm going to go into a bit about what made people hate Viacom CBS. That's the interesting stuff, right? Because usually when you find an investment that big at these prices and multiples, it's either because they indeed went to shit when talking performance, or there was a factor or two that driven them down to like the low teens levels from the 50s and 60s that they used to be. In Viacom CBS cases, of course, multiple factors. So I think we can spend a lot of time there to find what caused them to get down at these prices. And then we picked it up afterwards in Augury, and we got a position and entry and all that. But let's do like a brief history of what brought the price down. I can easily start off. The biggest factor is the Redstones. So National Amusements, we got an entity ran by the Redstones, which are the Redstones actually start the business of Viacom CBS back in the day. Really did well with them. They actually performed epically nice back in the day, but they kind of get older, and with time, I could say they got a bit out of sync with what the business was supposed to do to keep performing. They got a bit, short-sighted, and they didn't want to make any changes. They didn't want to sell this. They didn't want to do that project. So it kind of, since they're holding 80% voting power, this created a problem for the shareholders, right? Viacom CBS, now the most recent big action that took place, of course, was the remerger. I'm talking remerger because these two entities was the opposite back in the day. So back in the day, these two, one spun off out of the other, and now they're kind of getting together, back together again. And it has been a lot of speculations, a lot of lawsuits by the investors comparing back in the day numbers to the day and showing how much value was actually distracted by the sometimes inaction of Redstones, who directly control the management in these cases. Now, where this gets to be an actual problem, apart from the Redstones, is when you actually take in the other problems that the business started having. One is debt, of course. Now, debt is not necessarily a decision making creating problem. Like, it's not like you can blame it on the Redstones. The performance, the underperformance could be partially blamed to the Redstones and their inactions and their kind of bad attitude. But that had to, it got out of control. Like, it was a 18, 19, 20 billion, not a lot of liquidity. Yeah, whenever you see, I know you also kind of are allergic to debt. Like, every sane investor wouldn't invest in a business that's drowning in debt. Even if they kind of had the cash to pay for it, you would ideally want a company that could utilize that cash in investments instead of paying down their debt and investors.
If I can interrupt you, Chris, for a second there, when you're talking about debt. It's a short lesson I learned during COVID now, seeing retailers make a switch to e-commerce and stuff, that it's actually, relates to VIAC in a way, but when companies are taking on a bunch of debt, something happens like COVID, whatever happens, but when they can actually restructure and come out of it and become profitable, pay down that debt and then increase their cash flow, the total share price return on that is that can actually be greater than owning a growth company.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like the
exactly what happened
based off the valuation.
Yeah. So what is always the case with the investment thesis is inversion. So first we're looking at why did the stock arrive at these levels? Why did it drop like that? And then we can invert and say, okay, have those problems been solved now? And we're going to see that indeed, it's a good thing if you can survive through a cash buffer or in some way survive due to branding like Viacom CBS, because they did have a lot of public debt, and public debt is tradable. And that means that the company in times of struggle can go out and buy it back, retire it in levels that are at a discount to what they were paying interest when slammed to the future. Now, we're indeed going to see that the changes in sentiment came when Viacom CBS retired their debt, the one at least maturing in the next year. So at this point, they have no debt maturing until 2022 end, right? So they were able to go out, offer a premium to a then price of the debt, which was pretty cheap compared to the market prices we've had on average historically. And they were able to retire that debt and give that breath to the company to be more flexible and invest in the streaming operations, right? Now, I'm not going to go into the whole image of what has changed to the better. I want to keep on with the bad that happened before, prior to the inflection point. Another big subject is cord cutting. And it's a misconception more than it is an actual thing to worry about with Viacom CBS. Now, cord cutting has been persistent, and it's around single digits, like, but persistent 7, 8, 9% digits. And it usually hits Viacom CBS at the cable network segment. Now, why I'm saying it's a misconception is because once you're starting to get those hybrids of, you can get like pay TV streaming, which is an actual hybrid of the cable TV, but not with the cable, right? So it's the next generation. And what these companies do is they can offer you a deal that could make it more worthy to keep on the cable network plus an additional TV streaming service than to actually move away from it, cord cut your whatever pay subscription is and move away to streaming only, because there is huge product offering, much more channel provided in the cable networks. Like, let's not compare Netflix to the actual cable networks. The amount of content that is in there is much, much bigger. Yeah, you wanted to say something?
I was going to say how you mentioned like kind of the hybrid there of still having cable, but having the advantages of streaming as well. It just reminds me of what a lot of internet companies do. I don't know if this is like a national or global thing, but a lot of times in my area, a lot of people still have home phones, and it's kind of odd when I walk into a house and still see a working home phone. But it's because I'm not I'm not entirely sure like the specifics of the contracts and details of people's bill payments and stuff, but they created a hybrid to keep home phones while providing you internet to benefit them more than it benefits you, because no one's going to use their home phone still. So this sounds very similar to that same setup.
Yeah, indeed. It is. Yeah, and they're not – some companies will fail, but there is always, or may I say, usually a solution to your problem that is not does not require you for you to sell your once bigger segment, right? So there's not like – when you say cord cutting, it's not like Viacom CBS where you incur 100% loss in the next year from cord cutting, right? We're actually kind of transitioning, and I wish I was able to show you this because it really shows the intelligence behind the strategic intelligence that Viacom CBS utilized to find their next transitioning point from and to fight the cord cutting to a more digitalized offering, right? Now, what you should look at to understand what they were thinking and why did they introduce Pluto TV. Now, we're getting into kind of the positive sentiment that was created once the change started. We need to understand the difference between pay TV versus non-pay TV, right, in the households. Now, starting from 2013, we had triple digits, like around 100 million of pay TVs. Households in America, and we're talking only America because Viacom CBS's main segments are now domestic, like their main revenue is driven through domestic offerings. They will roll out the new products and started doing it right now in the Latin America region, but they will do globally into 2022 onwards. So right now I'm concentrating in the U.S. because that's their main source of revenue. Now, if you see the pay TVs consistently declining, and they are right now around the 70 million mark. So we have around 70 million people paying for their TV in the U.S. While in the meantime, we had a non-pay TV subscriber count in the low 20 millions, which right now is over 50. So we will soon have an inflection point where non-pay TV subscribers will surpass the pay TV subscribers in the U.S. And this is where Pluto TV is such a genius. They drive the trend upwards from non-pay TV while discarding whatever remains by the pay TV households, content licensing it away, making partnerships to squeeze the cash out of it. But it's not really – they report the Pluto TV performance under the cable networks. And what you need to understand is it's not that big of a deal because they are going to be able to move and offset the cord cutting fees and losses like immensely by the Pluto TV performance. And I won't even need to mention the CBS All Access performance, aka Paramount Plus, from 2021 onwards. Like, we're talking 2019 was cable networks, including Pluto TV, was around 12.5, something like that. And on the TV entertainment side, which was the licensing, the advertising, was around 11.9 billion. So we're talking huge growth. While the cord cutting is in single digits, we're talking Pluto TV growing at 55%. We're talking TV entertainment streaming growing at 56% in just one quarter. And if you see the tweets from Pluto TV CEO, of Bob Bakis from CEO of Viacom CBS, you will notice that they're actually seeing record numbers month over month during the summer, during October. Like, we're seeing huge growth. They actually stated, and I quote, "We can easily offset cord cutting fees through streaming growth only by Pluto TV, not considering the rest."
One comment I have on Pluto TV is, if any of the listeners have ever read One Up on Wall Street by Peter Lynch, he talks a lot about, I forget the specific term, but it was like window shopping, like walking down the street, and like some of those, like a Chipotle in the United States, a Dunkin' Donuts, a Starbucks, will and have been great investments. And something that I've noticed about Pluto TV is I was at like my girlfriend's cousin's house and I was like, what is like, I didn't know she didn't have TV, but she was watching like Cops, the TV show. And I was like, what streaming app allows you to watch Cops, the TV show? Because like generally it's a cable TV station. Mm-hmm. She said she was on a free trial of Pluto TV. About 2 weeks after that, I have an Amazon Fire Stick. I don't have TV at my house. And I was scrolling through, if anyone uses the Fire Stick, it's just like all your apps up there, like Spotify, Netflix are on there and stuff. And it has like recommended apps. Pluto is the first recommended app. And then again, this was literally only 2 days ago. I was upstairs, sitting on the couch with my dad. He's like, hey, have you heard of this Pluto TV? He's like, I'm thinking about giving it a try. So that's like, my dad is not technically savvy, like can barely work the remote for the TV. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
And he's picking up on Pluto TV. My girlfriend's cousin's picking up Pluto TV. So like, the trend is starting. It's a thing. One thing, like my next process in like helping you research this is that I can get a free trial to Pluto TV. So like, I'm going to sign up for Pluto TV tonight and just test the product, see what it has to offer, compare it to other streaming services that I've used. And I can tell that Cops was on it. It's already differentiated than other streaming services. That is part of the research process too.
There's a misconception here that Pluto TV is a paid platform. It's free actually, so you can start doing it for free.
Is it?
Yeah, yeah. It's a common misconception. I've seen people. That's what's the genius behind it. So briefly, let me connect the dots.
I see.
Yeah, yeah. With the briefly connected dots, they are creating Pluto TV, and they are riding the trend upwards for non-TV pay TV subscribers, which is going to increase in double digits up until 2023 at least. It's just the amount that is forecasted. It will go further. And they're riding that wave. They created a free platform that generates currently on Q2, it generated around $80 million in revenue. We're talking yearly revenues of over $350-400 million at least, right? And to think that they bought Pluto TV for $340 million, this means that they probably made back their investment money in less than a year, like probably a year or so. But when talking from the time they invested in it and acquired it, we're talking around a year maybe to make back their money, which is a great investment, right? Now, the genius behind that, apart from the actual investment, is that they are utilizing for ad revenue, and that ad revenue will also act as a funnel to maybe propose discounts or propose subscriptions to the actual premium services that they have, which is CBS All Access, Showtime. We have seen Showtime will stand a standalone. It won't be merged in the new Paramount Plus, which is the new service that is going to be rebranded. Is going to be called Paramount Plus. It's going to include CBS All Access, all these offerings and content that they have, the Paramount movies. But Showtime shows such growth that they will keep it standalone for now, right? Now, you can see the genius here, the structure that they have built. They have utilized the uptrend in non-pay TV subscribers, thus offsetting the cord cutting in the cable network segment by far. We're talking like 50% year-on-year growth to be continued. We have currently, the goal is around 33 million subscribers by year-end, which is going to be surpassed easily by Pluto TV. And they offer to these people domestically, okay? Now, they offer to these people the opportunity to join CBS All Access, try it through the ads, right? So they basically upsell them through a funnel. That also makes money from advertising from other companies. Like you have seen in Pluto TV, you can go and see advertising by Pepsi, Ford. A lot of great companies, big companies are advertising in there, right? Now, this is regarding to the change in sentiment from the misconceptions of cord cutting, the old school business, which was dying. The answer to that by Viacom of CBS is the streaming. The cable network compensated by the Pluto TV growth, which is considered like a non-pay TV service. I just wanted to stress that they actually took an investment made $340 million investment. They actually made back their money in 1 year. That's great for such a big company, right? And we're talking about a company that is around 24 billion annual revenue, talking margins of maybe 12, 15, adjusted, 20% non-adjusted. But imagine the margin improvement when they have this expansion through their new business. We will see more money coming in. Like, I am forecasting they can easily get to $6 EPS to common, right? So this could, we're talking, I'm going to get to that in a bit. I'm going to expand to it, but I just want to touch upon previous, like, I want to get to a subject before I get to the valuation part, okay? But realize that they do easily have the ability to reach $6 EPS. We need to first explain the why. Now, we touched upon the streaming. We touched upon the cable. Now, you need to understand, we're talking domestically. I said it before. You can imagine what will happen when the global rollout occurs, right? It will be, I cannot even imagine. I'm seeing like $3 EPS, $3.5, $4 EPS can be achieved just by the global side of operations, right? Not the domestic ones in the near future. Now, just the sentiment of the global rollout will change the price quite a lot, I believe, when it starts. It already started with Pluto TV expanding to more than 13 Latin American countries and some in Europe, including Spain, which actually they partnered with Movistar, which is the biggest one in the game in Spain. And this is also another key of Viacom CBS. You know, Andy, we really like talking about competitive advantages. You like for sure to talk about them a lot as well. And the competitive advantage of Viacom CBS is, in a big percentage, their name, their history, like their status, right? How do I say this? Like
the brand recognition, the brand power.
Yeah, they can achieve some partnerships effortlessly. It's insane.
Yeah, I was going to kind of hit on that when you were talking about debt, and then I like touched on restructuring. Something I've seen in similar plays is like they already have built the brand, which takes a huge amount of capital to build a brand. But now they have the brand, they have the name. People who have products, they want to partner with Viacom. So they built the brand. Now it's basically monetizing the brand, which doesn't cost near the amount of money as building a brand does. So now when they step foot into Spain, they can just, the competitive landscape is completely different for someone like VIAC than a new upcoming streaming service, is that they can step in and then they can partner with Movistar. Then they can go to Italy and they're a known name. So it's just the partnerships, that competitive advantage of them in the international expansion, or even globally, like some of the partnerships that I think we might still touch on now that you mentioned to me previously. But yeah, it's the brand power, which is like the intangible asset and is a competitive advantage in itself. Same goes for Apple. Like you can think of a lot of brand recognition, competitive advantages, mm-hmm. Nike.
Yeah. Yeah. It's once the giant wakes up and they do the right moves, they can grow rapidly because they were really distressed at this point. Like a lot of things have gone wrong and it was just a matter of, okay, let's set some things straight and fix some things. It was really easy to make those deals when you have the brand name of Viacom CBS behind you. We're talking over 20,000 titles and episodes and movies. Like Netflix has around 13,000, right? You can understand the magnitude and the history of the Viacom CBS and their library sizing. We're talking huge library, which they can do multiple things with, either content license it away, they can buy the content, the licensing from others, like you saw with Narcos. They are going to play free for Pluto TV users. Multiple deals have been closing. And this is another big pillar I'm seeing in the sentiment change, which is partnerships, collusion, right? Now, starting off with when we took partnerships, for some reason we're thinking that there are players in the game and it's going to be a winner and a loser. Now, what might surprise you with streaming and the services is that close to 60 to 70% of users using one platform usually have subscriptions to more than two others. That means that I'm going to present you with some statistics I have in front of me. So assuming you have a subscription on Netflix, let me see what the sample was, 10,000 people. 10,000 people that had subscription to Netflix, 65% of them actually had a subscription to Amazon Prime as well. 53% of them had a subscription to Disney Plus. Now, when talking Peacock Premium, 90% of those people actually had a subscription also to Netflix. So we're talking, there's not going to be one winner out of all of this. There is room for multiple winners because it's not like you have the customer base and whoever gets it, gets it. Like the customer base might be.
Yeah, and because the. Yeah. Sorry. I was just going to say, and it's multiple take all because the subscriber base is the entire population of the world. So to think that one person is going to, or one company is going to run streaming for the entire universe, is kind of a silly thought. And then I can verify what you were saying was that I don't have TV at my house. I have a Netflix subscription. I have a Showtime subscription. I have an HBO subscription. And if Pluto TV is free and it has ads, that doesn't bother me at all. I'm going to download Pluto TV when we're done with this conversation.
Yeah, 100%. So this translates to Viacom CBS shouldn't try to turn away people from other platforms, like, at least not entirely. Like, it's either a win or a loss, right? What they need to do and what they are currently doing is squeezing their platforms wherever they can in these already existent ones. Like, we're seeing collusion with Amazon, Apple, YouTube TV, global partners like Movistar. Don't underestimate, we're talking about Movistar, which refers as the biggest player in the whole country of Spain, right? It's a whole country. That's a whole customer-based country, right? You're talking big numbers here that could be used to funnel people through the Pluto TV viewership into those premium platforms like CBS, which is going to be Paramount Plus when it rolls out in 2021. Now, I want to touch on the partnerships kind of individually to paint the theme of what is indeed going on, which is kind of finding and getting the platforms out to as many people as they can and not necessarily turn them away from all the other platforms. Because at this point, they have colluded with anyone, it would be foolish to go against them as well, right? Now, you can't strike a deal with another service and actually then go against them. It kind of creates a conflict of interest. Now, let's start with Apple, because Apple is a big one. Apple is on the news due to their new iPhones. Now, what you should know about the new iPhones is for every new iPhone or indeed any new customer of Apple, which purchases a product, let's say an iPhone, a Mac, an iPad, what they get is the Apple TV discount, which is, I think it was for 1 year, right? Now, the deal they struck with Apple, Viacom CBS, is that instead of saying you have the Apple TV platform and then CBS All Access and Showtime, what they're saying now is Viacom CBS and Apple will offer to those users both CBS All Access and Showtime for $9.99, which would, without the deal, would be close to $20.99. So you're getting every new user of Apple products getting exposed to these services. And if you look at the new iPhone 12 ad, it actually shows the CBS All Access platform, because when the phone is unlocked and the girl in the ad was just browsing through it and clicking on something, she was clicking on Apple TV, and next to them it was CBS All Access and Showtime. It was a split second, you would miss it, but it's advertising. It shows, like, you're talking huge customer base here with Apple. So that's why I wanted to touch upon it first. It's not a matter of turning people away from Apple TV. It's for getting your product across to as many people as you can so they can maybe subscribe to your platform as well. That's why they understood, and the Viacom CBS management, and it's something that retail investors might have hard time understanding, that it's not a win or a lose. You can have multiple platforms. And there are studies, a lot of studies nowadays to back that fact up, that a lot of people subscribe to multiple services. Now, we have...
The conversion strategy of customers there is pretty nice when you offer that discount. Another example is Dropbox. So I used to be a Mac user and I got a PC. When you get it on there, you have like 1 year free of Dropbox or 25 gigs of memory in Dropbox for free for 1 year. So I started using Dropbox, obviously, because I needed a cloud storage. I did previously use whatever. That's not important to the story. But so I started using Dropbox and now my 1 year is up. So I've been using Dropbox, all of my stuff, all of my stock research, everything Augury related is stored on Dropbox. So now I'm going to start paying $100 annual subscription to Dropbox. So it's the same thing, is that they're pulling you into CBS All Access. I think CBS All Access gives you NFL as well. I think that's a big selling point for CBS All Access. But once you get a customer conditioned to the service you're providing, then they're cut off cold turkey from that. I bet there's data to back this up, but I haven't obviously dug into it, that conversion is a lot more probable to keep that customer.
Yeah, it is indeed.
And then the lifetime value increases over time.
Yep, exactly. Spot on. We have, apart from Apple, like we have the collusion with YouTube TV. We have the collusion with Amazon. Now, when asked there was a conference that Bob Bakis attended, and for some reason he didn't mention Roku a lot, if not any. I think he kind of hinted in an Amazon partnership or deal, which I cannot say any more about it because I don't even know yet what's going to happen. We are indeed seeing like the CFO moving away and coming into the Amazon CFO going into the Viacom CBS. Now they announced a couple of days ago that it was an NFL game was going to be co-streamed by Amazon Prime as well as Viacom CBS. So I don't know. I'm seeing a collusion here rather than a fight. Bakis said, and I quote, they continue to be an excellent partner for us, and we are for them, and we will be. Like, so it's like I'm seeing something here, but I can't tell what exactly for now. But it's good to know that they're not on the enemy side of Amazon, because Amazon has a tradition of crushing enemies. So it's good to have them on your side. Now, global partners, we know Movistar now, which is the biggest, but I'm sure we will get to many countries and many major players in each country. And that kind of concludes the partnership pillar, I cannot even try to put a number on the customer base they could have. Like, we're talking millions and millions of people, like Trump says, billions and billions. Yeah, but it's a huge customer base, and it would be a joke to say that this could not offset the losses from cord cutting, which would not be that bad. We have Pluto TV compensating for that just by itself. I mean, mm-hmm. Paramount Plus, you cannot forecast something that's non-existent at this point. So Paramount Plus, we need to first launch, see how it goes, the global rollout, see the first two or three quarters of performance, the subscriber growth. Right, the Google Trends currently shows Argentina, which was recently rolled out with Pluto TV, and some other Latin America countries showing all-time highs in interest in Google searches for Pluto TV. So that's a positive catalyst for us to see what the demand could look like. I'm not going to go into details a lot about because I don't even know. I just know that what I paid for was really cheap compared to what I'm getting. Now, if I'm getting 3 or 4 or 5x my money, it's not really something I will try to do even if I can. I want to be realistic about it. I want to guarantee that indeed the risk reward makes sense. The investment is going to return multiples Now, the specifics, I'd like to see, right? I'm not going to fall in love with Bakis or the Viacom CBS team. I'm just expecting them to see how are they going to utilize that global rollout. Like, I want to see the subscriber growth getting pretty intense. Now, that brings us to our side of things, which is valuation, right? Now, I don't know where to start with valuation. We're talking on a market sector which has 30x multiples on the earnings. Viacom had less than 10. And considering the growth, that's pretty insane. If they are able to...
So what you're already getting to is that there's fundamental growth coming along with a nice possibility of some multiple expansion in there as well.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So you're buying a company that has fundamental catalysts inbound, trading at a low multiple. So you're kind of hitting the best of both worlds when you're looking at shareholder returns from a stock price perspective.
Yeah, it was first the numbers. How can I phrase this? What magnified the losses prior to the Viacom CBS being handled really badly? It was magnified to the share price because of the hate, the sentiment, right? Because the multiples really got weak. Now that we are in the opposite side of things, it's like leverage. The sentiment leverages the result. If you have a really bad company, even the smallest change to the better could have a huge impact on sentiment. And that translates into expansion of multiples. And that multiple expansion, if you have a move from $5 EPS to $5.50 and multiple goes from 5x to 10x, the biggest change will come from the multiples in price appreciation, right? So the multiple really leverages the returns when performing, when a company does perform better than it used to. So that's good, and you should utilize it in a lot of companies. The inflection point companies are usually companies that have created bad sentiment prior to the inflection point, and that depressed the whole multiple situation. Now, when the picture turns and gets brighter, sentiment changes, multiples leverage the other side. Results are better due to that. I don't really have anything to add.
That's just a repeatable process right there, is finding something similar to APT where the sentiment turned absolutely negative, but you can see that there's fundamental catalysts inbound. So you're basically exploiting volatility and sentiment at the same time, because then right when that sentiment changes, the people who didn't do their work, they're late to the show, you're already there. So you get to take advantage of these fundamental catalysts, and then the sentiment, which is really the driver of multiple expansion. And if you look at Connor Haley's case study of like the top 200 returning small cap stocks, like basically all the price wasn't from EBITDA growth. It was from multiple expansion. Like the number three returner was basically all returns were from multiple expansion. Wow. So basically my takeaways from this conversation about Viacom is the brand recognition. I mean, as someone who lives in the U.S., it's pretty obvious. Everybody knows when it comes to CBS All Access, football, Pluto TV. I didn't know some of the details that you shared with me about that. That's actually pretty exciting. That is their sales funnel right there, is pulling into a free service. Then the Apple partnership, then funneling them and converting to long-term customers. And probably eventually they're not going to be paying that $9.99. They're going to be paying CBS All Access price at some point, basically how it always works when you're the consumer. Mm-hmm. And then they're trading at extremely low multiples. I've seen your valuation work in the chat as well. We could have probably dove in a little deeper into valuation, but it's so obvious that it's undervalued that you don't even need to do it. And that's kind of the best place, is when you don't even necessarily need a model to see that it's undervalued. Or when you're just beginning to build a model, you're like, oh shit, okay, like I don't even need to go any further. I already understand it. So I think this was, listeners will get a lot of value out of this. I got a lot of value out of this because I do own a small amount of VIAC, but now after this conversation, I feel a little bit more confident. I haven't been doing my deep dive due diligence. I've just been following along with you. and versus text versus voice, and we can see each other visually. It's definitely raised my confidence level as a Viacom shareholder, and now I'm interested in accumulating some more shares on my own. So, disclaimer, I am long Viac, Chris, as well, right?
Should I pull it the camera too, or is it two of you that I'm long? Okay. Yeah, I feel like if people have a hard time understanding what obvious mean in some occasions, I just see that the company has been and will continue to put up $5 a share of EPS annually, easily, if not more going forward. And we're talking of a price that at one point was like $11. Right, so we're talking micro cap, small cap situation, like arbitrage opportunities here with Viacom CBS, such a large cap. Mm-hmm. In the meantime, we have the market, like I said, at 30x multiples, and in some instances, the competitors lose money, like they're not even making bucks of EPS positively, and that's GAAP, not non-GAAP measures. Like they're losing money. And they are 30 EPS, 90 EPS. Like we're talking 90 multiples, right? This is insane. Like you should expect a company that can create $5 of EPS to be trading at $70, $80, if not more, in such a growth, big growth environment. And with that EPS alone, it's like that's why the basic thesis of Viacom CBS puts it at a fair worst case. Like, worst case, you could see $60, $70 in Viacom CBS. Best case, we're talking like $100, $130, $150. You can talk multiples expansion afterwards if the global rollout outperforms. Because I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I do think the – like, you should see the comparison if you open the financials – I think it was the press release of Viacom CBS – and you check out the international status and the domestic ones, you could see like the domestic one is multiples larger right now in terms of revenue. And you should understand that global rollout means you're referring to like the population of the world minus the 300 million that live in the US, right? So we're talking billions of people that could potentially be customers. And what if we saw international business being bigger than the domestic one, and they are preparing in Viacom CBS, like they're doing consolidation in the international segments and try to prepare it for what is to come. Like imagine what would happen if you see the international being bigger than domestic, with domestic being where it is right now. We're talking a lot of billion increases in revenue. Like yeah, I don't have anything more to say on that. It's pretty straightforward before you get to even build a model for you. It's like $6 EPS.
Along with,
yeah.
I was going to say, along with limited downside from the valuation is pretty obvious. If any of our subscribers are listening, probably are. You can see Chris's model in the chat. He has a lot of research on the website as well under the login. So check that out. Hit him up if you have questions. I think that wraps it up for us here. So thanks for joining me, Chris. It was a good episode.
Oh, it's a pleasure. I love talking Viacom, man. They did a great job. And yeah, it's an ever-evolving story. Just to keep put a little disclaimer, just like we're putting – I'm loving this position. I just want to put in disclaimer and emphasize that when talking a long position and you see us laughing and maybe – saying congratulations to whatever management does, that doesn't mean that we fall in love with the company, right? So that's why I said, wait, I'm waiting on the rollout, but it's not like I'm in any way biased towards what they're going to deliver to me, right? So do pay attention when you're long to not get too biased in your approaches and maybe slip some things under the carpet if they underperform. I know Andy is pretty good with that. He foresaw ZYXI pretty early, and it actually dipped a lot after we took our position and liquidated it. What? How much did it drop? Are you aware? I think it's pretty steep drop, actually.
We exited around $24 a share. It ran to 30, and then from 30, took a nosedive to $14 a share.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, and you could never expect really top tick everything,
Yeah.
Like that, because from 24 to 30, there was no reason for the move besides multiple expansion.
And you can never justify that. And you at least sell some of your estate and the biggest part of it. At least you can leave some to maybe see where this ends up, because you can see a lot of companies running and going wild after a while. But it's not justified for me to keep, if you are well above your fair value range, which is always going to be a range, like worst case, base case scenario, you shouldn't hold full position on it. Like, it's kind of dumb.
All right, boys. That was a good episode.
Nice talk.
Yep. See you, boys.
Yep.